It's June 2nd, 2008. This is Mike Benedetti for PieandCoffee.org. I'm talking with Claire Schaefer Duffy, who was just convicted for a nonviolent civil disobedience related to the Guantanamo prison at the United States Supreme Court. So, Claire, you were in a trial most of last week.
Yes.
How did that go?
It went very well. It was a tough experience because we were in court for 4 days straight. It was kind of a hothouse experience. We, the 35 co-defendants would meet in the church. We stayed at St. Stephen's Church. Many of us slept at the church. We met there on Monday. We went to court on Tuesday. We'd meet during lunch. We'd meet after, over dinner. Many of us still slept at the church, wake up, back to court. It was a very focused experience. So it was taxing in that regard. But very positive. We were having a kind of quick evaluation on Friday evening, and a literary professor who was among the 35 co-defendants from Fordham, he said, "I'm quite cynical about America, but this was a really joyous week, and I feel better about being American." And I thought that summed up the sentiment. Just not that we were stellar legally in our presence in court, but that just the very diversity of personalities that were among us as co-defendants and expressed in the courtroom, because the trial had many, many manifestations. Some people remained silent throughout the trial in solidarity with the Guantanamo detainees. Some people, we took turns speaking, we had different roles. Some were direct examiners, some were witnesses, people made sentencing statements. Some people, you know, at times I thought were a room full of argumentative preachers. We mm-hmm. might have a holy message, but my goodness, we can't let something go. You know, and I felt sorry for the judge because he would say, "I'm not going to let you go down that road arguing," and still right. somebody would persevere. But looking back, so at times, you know, I found myself kind of wincing at the rhetoric that some of my friends would engage in. And
I heard there was some yelling at the judge.
Oh yeah, there was yelling at the judge. Other times the judge, to his credit, permitted a lot of speechifying, much mm-hmm. more than other judges would. But I think looking back, it was what we wanted, not in the way we expected. It was Americans having a conversation, a public conversation about this denial of habeas rights to detainees, what it means with regard to us as a people, and to be so indefinite about torture. What does that say about us as a people? And it also was a chance, I mean, repeatedly, to bring in these anonymous individuals or people who had remained anonymous, the detainees at Guantanamo.
Did people get to talk about the background?
Very much so.
Very much so.
From beginning to end of the trial. So, for example, when the trial opened, the prosecution's case was very focused on identity because they had to identify that all 35 of us were there. And
because people had given the names of detainees
right.
when they were
so
arrested.
Right, so when we were arrested, we gave the names of the detainees, and that's how we identified ourselves. And we decided in the trial that we would give our own names, always followed by the name of the detainee that we were speaking on behalf of.
Okay.
So when the judge did the opening roll call, because he was very nervous about who is in this courtroom,
right.
and the prosecution was, where are people sitting in this courtroom? And it became fascinating because the who was the 35 co-defendants plus all these men whom none of us put a body to, but they had names, they had stories.
Right.
So that was very moving. That was very moving. And I mean, I remember vividly Christine Gaunt, a hog farmer from Iowa. She had this very slow, deliberate way of speaking. And I think she remained entirely silent throughout the trial, except in the opening when she stated her name and she said, "I'm here on behalf of," and then she gave the detainee, the ghost of so-and-so, and I can't remember the name of the man, unfortunately, but he was an Afghan who had cancer and died in Guantanamo.
Oh.
And to his death said that he was innocent.
Okay.
And others, you know, would... And then at the end of the trial, when we made our closing sentencing statement, she again, having stayed silent through the whole trial, said, "I'm Christine Gaunt, and I'm still here on behalf of the ghost of so-and-so."
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite... quite moving, that especially this attempt to bring in these men into the circle of our society, and but there were rough points too.
I heard that there was, and maybe you can clarify this for me, I heard that there was a certain amount of back and forth about people trying to get into maybe nitpicky details about, did you actually identify me when you arrested me?
Yes, I think we struggled because there are 35 co-defendants with different expectations, and some people wanted to approach this with a legal argument saying that we had a right to be there, and it was a First Amendment argument. Its points, I'm not 100% clear that we had an effective case in this instance, because
right.
The Lieutenant Smith on the steps of the Supreme Court is videoed warning us quite specifically, not the group that I was arrested with. Inside, we were not warned, we were just arrested. But there were people who were committed to taking the legal approach in the conversation with the judge.
Mm-hmm.
There were those who felt that the legal issue was less significant than raising the moral question. And of course, the larger
issue, raising that legal issue of the Guantanamo inmates more than any particular legal issues that you guys had.
Right, not a narrow definition of what is legal. So it meant that we did get into conversations about, can the prosecution literally put me, meaning one of the co-defendants, inside the Great Hall of the Supreme Court. Sometimes it bordered, I thought, on the absurd, because we had all definitely gone into the Great Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, it was an erratic trial, because we were kind of all over the ballpark in how we were trying to argue. But I think that the deeper issues clearly came out, because the judge, while he didn't buy any of our small legal points, he said, "You cannot tell me this was not a group, because the statute prohibits calling attention to a political party, organization, or movement." He said, "You are emphatically, no doubt about it, a group. These
mm-hmm.
things don't happen by happenstance, that 42 people just suddenly appear in the Great Hall with orange t-shirts on that say, 'Shut down Guantanamo.'" And he's correct in that regard.
Well,
but he also said...
Now in the days of the internet, they do have what you would call a flash mob. But this was no
well,
flash mob. This is a well-organized effort.
That's true. No, it wasn't, because our own defense witnesses said we have been, you know, planning this for a while. But he did say, "I understand that you know, there's something going on in Guantanamo." At one point, I thought it was a rather shockingly ignorant statement on his part, because he said alleged torture, and that's not debatable, you know, that the men have been tortured there.
He's the judge speaking from the bench, so maybe he needs to be conservative in his statements.
Yeah. But it was a very powerful, very, very powerful experience. And
well, I want to ask you two questions. One was, I know that most people got a suspended sentence,
right?
And some were sentenced to between 1 and 15 days.
Yes.
What? And I was looking down through the names of people. There were people who I recognized who'd done a lot of civil disobedience before,
right,
who got a suspended sentence. So, what was it that made it so that some people ended up getting a little jail time?
Those who refused to accept the condition of their probation.
Okay.
So, the prosecution offered suspended sentences to everybody.
Okay.
Ranged from 10 to 30 days. The judge would respond often with a smaller amount of a suspended jail sentence.
And what was the probation condition?
The probation condition is to stay away from the Supreme Court for a year.
Okay.
So those who said, "I cannot," as one woman eloquently put it, "I can't put my conscience on ice,"
mm-hmm.
she was sentenced to 15 days.
Okay.
And that is Susan Crane. And I think another woman was sentenced to 10, and there were some men sentenced to 10. But it was for that reason.
So it wasn't like the people who were yelled more at the judge got more of a sentence.
No, in fact, one co-defendant was removed twice for yelling at the judge.
Okay.
In both instances, he was brought back and continued to speak with the judge, but he wasn't
mm-hmm.
penalized
okay.
At all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for that, which some judges could do. And I thought the prosecution, while she didn't strike me as overly aggressive, I've been in some courtrooms where the prosecution tries to paint activists as just in one trial I sat in, they were terrorists and, you know,
just a bunch of maniacs running around.
Anarchists.
Yes.
That if their vision for society persevered, we would have no law and there would be anarchy, and God forbid you don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
So this was not at all, the prosecution didn't really indulge in a whole lot of rhetoric. But what was fascinating is the evidence offered by the prosecution is video footage of people coming up onto the steps of the Supreme Court. And again, identity was the heart of her argument. So during her offering of evidence, she showed the video. During her closing statements, she showed the same video. It's a 10-minute segment of the demonstrators who were on the sidewalk coming up onto the steps of these steps that lead up to the Supreme Court, as one defendant said, where free speech stops, you know,
mm-hmm.
because, and people are kneeling down, they're in hoods. Lieutenant Smith comes and very formally warns the silent people that if you do not move, you will be arrested. The warning is given 3 times. But it's extremely silent amongst those who were kneeling on the steps. There's no talking. And Matt Deloisio is marching up and down in silence. He speaks, you know, with the lieutenant, but then he walks back and forth along the steps holding a sign that says, "Shut down Guantanamo." But on the sidewalk is the legal vigil, and there are hundreds gathered there. And you can hear above Lieutenant Smith's very formal warning this voice describing conditions of the men in Guantanamo. It's a very dramatic footage, because the person is speaking very clearly about the kinds of torture used, the number of men in detention, and you just hear it ominously above this smaller engagement between the activist and the lieutenant. So I've requested the video, because I was impressed. I thought, wow, this is a very effective communication. The prosecution, of course, intended it to indict us. And
right.
She would stop during closing argument. She would freeze frame and say, "And see, here's Art Laffin holding the sign." And
Arthur
then
Laffin, known criminal.
Right. And then the footage would go another 30 seconds, and you'd hear this voice describing the persecution in Guantanamo, freeze frame, and here is Paul Magno. So it was really, really kind
interesting
of,
to turn that evidence
yeah.
into this
yeah, yeah, yeah,
political
yeah.
statement of its own.
Yeah. Oh, another co-defendant that was watching it, he said that was a really moving piece of footage. It could have been 100 years ago. It could have been 100 years in the future, because it had a very ghostly quality. It's
mm-hmm.
poor video quality.
Right.
It's a police, you know, video. But they didn't have one of us inside the courthouse. And we, for our defense, we basically tried to reframe the government's narrative, because the government, in its testimony, they brought in 9 federal marshals, and they testified that noise had just broken out kind of erratically and mysteriously, and in reality, people began to shout out, "Close Guantanamo," after the federal marshals swept into the Great Hall and began snatching statements and snatching banners. They were very aggressive
mm-hmm.
in trying to clamp down the intended program, because the program was going to be, we would read the statement why we... Actually, the program was going to be a woman would sing, and I was listening for her singing, and that would be our cue to gather. Someone would read the statement of why we are here. Then very solemnly we would read out the names of the more than 200, I think it's 275 men
hmm.
who are currently detained. And it would be done kind of in a litany.
Okay.
But because it was such an extraordinary event to to have that many people inside the Supreme Court protesting. The marshals were extremely nervous, extremely, mm-hmm. and they began running around and arresting people and going crazy. So we had very effective testimony from a history professor who was the last to get arrested, and he kind of corrected the suggestion that we were just screaming meanies who descended on the Great Hall, you know. But yeah, it was a very, very powerful. Trials are dramatic events, extremely dramatic.
Well, I think you answered my second question.
Yes.
Thanks for talking with me.
Yeah,
and thanks for doing this. And I'm glad you did it, and I'm glad you didn't do any jail time.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I think there's strong solidarity, so people will see what's going to happen next.